You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening, I'm Al Voner, and this is this week's edition of The Public Eye. So nice to have you with us. A new book, A Question of Paternity, came across my desk a few weeks ago, and I found it quite intriguing. So as I went through the book, a story not unlike other stories. As you go through life, most of us think, well, you know, we've had a normal upbringing. We've had mom and dad gave us the best rearing when anybody could possibly have, and everything is honky-dory. Now I'm on my own, and the plans for the future are up to me. Some people don't always have that. In fact, my guest today is internationally known investigative reporter David Tereshuk. His new book is A Question of Paternity, and over the years, David has traveled the world questioning perpetrators and victims of war and injustice, and then came upon the question of who his real father was. Thus, the title of the book, A Question of Paternity. So for the next half hour, we'll be talking with David about the book, how this all came about, the motivations for putting it between the pages, a very personal story that I'm sure will affect all of you. So, just sit back, relax, and, listen in. David, nice to have you with us.
I'm very glad to be on your show, Al. I really am.
David, how does one come about it? As I said at the outset, most of us think, well, I've had a mom and dad. I've had a pretty normal upbringing. That's how it's supposed to be. That's how nature says it's supposed to be. Well, no, that's not exactly how it works. But in your case, you've been busy for almost half a century as an investigative reporter traveling around the world. But how did you come upon the questioning who your real father was?
Well, I think, Al, I was always questioning right from the get-go. Whether I voiced that question early on is a critical question. I grew up without a father. That's pretty clear from the title of the book and the main storyline of it. I didn't know who my father was. My mother wouldn't tell me. I was born in 1948. My mother conceived me when she was 15, teen pregnancy. I was born when she was 16. And it was a big, dark secret in our home who my father was. And there were other shady, unclear things about my upbringing as a consequence of that, not just the mystery of who my father was, but in a way, whose I was in other directions too. The shame and the scandal, as my family saw it, impelled the head of my family, who was my grandmother, to put some conditions on my presence in the house. My mother was sent away nearly 200 miles to a sister's home in England. We were in the border country between England and Scotland. My mother was sent away all that distance deep into England for me to be born in some degree of secrecy, I suppose. And I was allowed back under, as I say, these terms and conditions. The first term was that I should be passed off. I don't really know how they thought they would get away with this, but in the long term anyway. But I was to be passed off as my grandmother's latest child. Now, she already had 10 children. Nine survived. One died at birth. There was a considerable brood she already had, and she was well past childbearing age by the time I came along. So it was a strange fiction to think that they could invent convincingly. And the other condition was that my mother, who was a bright child, evidently, and had gone to high school, not something that many people in our village had done at that point in time. But the terms of the deal were that she would stop going to high school. Her education would stop, and she would go out to work and become our family's only breadwinner. I also in the household had two young boys alongside me, to all intents and purposes. They seemed like my brothers. They were certainly my playmates, but they were in fact my mother's younger brothers. They were in fact my uncles. So there was I in this household, calling my grandmother Mam, which is the Scottish diminutive for Mom.
Mm-hmm.
I called my mother by her first name, Hilda. Always had them right up until the end of her life. So I just had this cloud of uncertainty about just exactly whose I was. And as a consequence, maybe I wasn't very sure about who I was. I was very nervous. I was very insecure, very anxious as a kid. And that sort of conditioned the way that I grew up and the kind of person I think I became.
Yeah. David, in that period, you know, I know how it was here in this country, but over in Europe at that period when you were growing up, any inkling of questioning whether a particular man or woman fathered a particular child, was that just something that people you didn't talk about, you just didn't want to hear about, you covered it up, and that made it more difficult?
There was certainly a considerable disparagement of people like me, and the words that were used for a long time into my young life were negative. I have to say, I was called a bastard, illegitimate. Illegitimate always struck me as a particularly unpleasant thing to be called.
Right.
Born on the wrong side of the sheet, that was another phrase that was used. So generally speaking, people who whose father was a mystery, or was unknown at least, or not acknowledged, that was always a mark of some kind of, I don't know quite what the right word is. It was not good. Anyway, put it that way.
Right.
It was not good.
Right.
I carried a lot of unhappy labels.
What was the relate? I mean, I'm listening, I'm thinking to myself, okay, my mother is, I don't know that she's my mother. My grandmother is portraying or playing the role of my mother. My two uncles, I'm thinking, are siblings. Did any of that seem strange, or did it kind of flow? I mean, did it make sense at the time?
I think I just accepted it. Kids are remarkably accepting on the whole, I think, in my experience. I think I just took it as a fact of life. Things changed a bit when I started going to school at the age of five. I went to this little village school. It was a relatively poor community overall, and we were certainly in the poorest end of the village, as it were. We lived in public housing, a small tract of public housing, not a vast housing project like you get in American cities. But when I went to this school, every other kid seemed to have a father. I don't imagine in this community of about 2,000 or so that I was the only fatherless kid, mm-hmm. but it seemed that way. They all had dads, and they all seemed to be farmers. You know, I didn't have a dad to talk about when they all talked about their dads. So that kind of singularity, a discomforting singularity, was something that I became very aware of. Yes, I suppose I started to ask myself the questions. I say I suppose because my conscious memory is that I never approached this subject, and I suspect that I was warned off it. I don't remember being told out loud that this is something I shouldn't talk about, but I seem to internalize the notion that it was not to be approached, this
right.
whole subject.
Right.
And I never did approach it for a long, long time. When I got into my teens and then my young adulthood, I think I'd told myself by this time that it really didn't matter. It was unimportant to me. I didn't care. I was my own man.
Mm-hmm.
I was making my own way in the world, which I did, I thought, in my terms, very successfully. And it really didn't matter who my father was. I couldn't care less.
Well,
that changed, of course, and that ended up being the book that
I wrote. Yeah, yeah.
But for a long time, I told myself I didn't care.
But you know what, David, and you just alluded to it. The fact of the matter is now, in many cases, even if a child knows that, you know, maybe mom and dad gotten divorced, and you know, mom remarried, and now there's a you know, somebody stepping in as or at least a male role model. In the absence of that, you still found the courage. The drive to make something of yourself, which you obviously did. So do you feel that, at least back then, that you didn't need a male role model? I mean, you were just destined to just do your own thing. You were going to, you know, as they say, pull yourself up by the bootstraps and just, you know, run with the ball.
That's pretty much exactly what I thought. Yes, Al, you put it better than I ever did, but that was my attitude, for sure, yeah.
I mean, thank God, because so many young people, whether it's a young boy or a young girl, many will tell you, you know, I miss mom or I miss dad, or it's nice to have both. Some grow up without that, and they seem misaligned. I'm not saying it's always the case, but many times it can be an underlying reason why things happen later in life. But you seem to reckon with it. You seem to have been able to deal with it, quite effectively. I just want to take a quick pause, and then we'll come right back. You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. My guest this week is internationally known investigative reporter David Tereshek. His new book is A Question of Paternity, and a very personal memoir, a book of searching for the real father, the father that he never had. And David, I guess the question when I first started reading the book coming to my mind is, why after so many years? Why not way back? I mean, you got into your teens, you got into college age. I mean, a point where now you were your own person. You could have point blank gone to any member of the family and said, okay, what's going on here? You know, who is my father? Who was my father? Why so many years later?
Well, for a long time, perhaps a lot longer than I should have done, really. I saw myself as this entirely self-reliant person that you were talking about a moment ago. I didn't want to tackle the subject. I told myself, this is my rationalization to myself, that it was unimportant. It's worth saying, by the way, that one of my ways of coping as well with this mystery, I can say this in retrospect, I don't think I believed this for a moment at the time, but I took refuge in something else. I became an alcoholic, and I used alcohol as a way of dampening down uncomfortable feelings, or trying to escape uncomfortable feelings. It was only a temporary fix, of course. I mean, that's what alcohol is.
Right.
It's also, if you're an alcoholic, it's a very bad thing to keep on drinking. And my health suffered terribly, and my mental capacity was often seriously impaired. And it was only when, in my 40s, I decided that this was a condition I could not go on continuing. I had to stop drinking, otherwise I would die. That I finally got sober, and you know, my world, just generally speaking, cleared up. My vision of the world cleared up. I began to see things squarely, head on, rather than trying to look at them obliquely or evade them, as I did with the help of alcohol. Help early on, of course, hindrance later.
Yeah.
And it was only after I got sober that I decided to tackle the question in that blunt, straightforward way that you've just described. I did try and talk to my mother about it, and indeed other members of the family, and other members of the family just didn't know what the truth was. They weren't able to tell me, and my mother was very unwilling to tell me. I probed gently at first, and I think it was always gentle. I never got obnoxious about it, but I was firm and insistent. And eventually she did tell me a story, and it was a shocking story of how I was conceived, according to her. She told me, it was by now I was in my early 50s, and she told me that when she was 15, a high school girl, she went to a friend's religious service. The friend was Catholic. The church service was a Roman Catholic mass. There was no church in our village, but a mass was celebrated for the small Catholic community that existed there.
Mm-hmm.
In the offices of the local doctor, the local general practitioner, because he happened to be a Catholic. And a priest came from the nearby city, a young priest, according to my mother, who took mass there. And he, according to my mother is my only source for this. He offered her a walk home, but didn't take her home. He dragged her into a garden, pushed her on the floor of that garden, the ground, and raped her.
Mm.
And that was how I came to be engendered.
Yeah.
And it was a shocking story to hear, of course. It just stunned me, and I didn't know quite what to do with it at first.
I can't imagine. I mean, as you said, I mean, you're on the brink of trying to find out the truth, and one inkling of truth comes through, it's even more devastating. It's almost so let me ask you, with that said, would it have been better not to know? I mean, under the circumstances I'm talking about, I mean, if she had said, well, yes, we decided we weren't going to get married, the gentleman that fathered you, and you know, he's been living here, and here's the address and the name, and then things might have been hunky dory, but this was certainly a bizarre revelation, which would have probably thrown many people back into either drinking or depression. How did you react to that?
Well, stunned silence for quite a few days.
I bet.
I talked to my sister, technically my half sister, but she was in every way a full sister to me. We had different fathers, of course, and we had a different attitude to life in many ways, but we were great friends. And she and I talked, and I got over the shock of it, I suppose. Remember that this was at a time when the Catholic Church was being accused in many quarters, in many countries, England, Scotland, Ireland, in the United States, Boston particularly was a sort of epicenter of this too. The sexual abuse by priests was a scandal of worldwide proportions.
Right.
So I sort of saw my case as just part of that general appalling story of priests' abuse of authority, the sexual abuse of children that they were responsible for or had some power over. It very quickly turned into a two-pronged effort by me. I wanted to know who this person was, just personally, but I also was aware that a terrible crime had been committed. A 15-year-old was impregnated by a person in authority, and this needed to be exposed, I thought. It was all the journalistic juices that flow in my veins that came to the fore here, and I was determined to find out who this man was.
Right. Rape. It's simply put, it was rape.
Yes.
But again, many people don't want to, especially in a small knit community, don't want to talk about those things, David, because they feel it's a dark cloud over the entire. It tarnishes, if you will, the image of a community, of a people. And I get that. I understand that. But for someone like yourself, one wanting the truth, and as you said, having those investigative genes that I'm sure were working overtime to find the answers, you know, not only was it challenging, but the emotional effect that it had on you. Who at that point, I mean, had you made amends with your real mother? Had you started to bond with her and beyond what she had told you, that initial shock, was she able to give you any more comfort?
We talked a long time. The longest conversation I ever had with my mother was a result of her telling me this story. And I tried to see it from many angles. I tried to get her view of it as fully as I could. And I got to understand a lot more about her and her own childhood before, up to the point where she became pregnant. She had not had an easy life. And I think that she was, she had, for instance, been fostered away from home by my grandmother. She was sent to live with some elderly spinsters, as we called them in those days, elderly sisters who were very religious and looked after my mother for about 5 years of her young life. But she was separated from her family. And I suspect that when she did come back to the family home, she was in an emotionally vulnerable state. And this is my speculation, but and she really didn't want to talk about this aspect of it and didn't go into it with me. But I came to the feeling that she was, in a way, a prime target for abuse, particularly from anyone who might show her some interest in her.
Right.
I suppose, in terms of her capacity for comforting me, I don't recall that as being part of the mix, really. I believe at that point she had told me a story. I'd been pressing for information, and she'd given me the information, and she didn't want to talk about it anymore after that point.
As I'm listening to you and after reading the book, I'm saying to myself, who would feel comfortable with that topic, especially as you said, she was vulnerable to begin with, passed around, never had much stability in her own life. As we start to wind down, I mean, you've interviewed, world leaders, Tony Blair from the UK, Gordon Brown, Robert Mugabe, Hugo Chavez, Simon Perez, Nelson Mandela. I mean, you've spoken with, you know, internationally known leaders, people who have been in the news, you know, for decades, both current and past. But this sounds like this one really rocked the boat, as they say, and really had a profound impact on you personally. The book is just, I mean, you don't have to have gone through the same things that David has gone through, but this book is something that I certainly urge people to read. One, A Question of Paternity is just, it's a human life story. This is not made up. David has lived through this. And just being able to have the courage to write it and put it between the pages of the book, I think in itself is a phenomenal feat. David, real quickly, if people want to reach out to you directly, pose questions to you, maybe find out more about your background, how might they do that?
Well, I write a regular column online, and it's also a radio broadcast with the same title. It's called The Media Beat, and you can find it at themediabeat.com. You'll find full details of all my writing there, including, of course, the book, A Question of Paternity, My Life as an Unaffiliated Reporter.
And as I said, you don't have to have been, you know, this is a book for anybody. It's really the revelations, the eye-opening, the human impact of what David has gone through and his family, I think would humble any one of us. And it's just a marvelous read. It really is. Again, the book is A Question of Paternity. I want to thank my guest, well-known international reporter David Tereshchuk. Thank you so much for joining us. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.